Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Objection, the worldwide leader in contrarian ahlery. Before I get into the nitty-gritty of this podcast, I am David Johnson, joined by Dan Mancini on this wonderful post-Halloween day, I suppose. This is Monday.
I'm still, you know, coming down from the sugar high.
That's right. That's right. You got the kids. You're right in, like, the teeth of the trick-or-treat.
Yes, literally.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Do you like, are you, you know, do you, if the kids get like an apple or something, do you throw that away immediately just because it's got to be wrapped candy and packaged candy, all that stuff? You know, because our daughter's only 7 months old. So we're not even close to that yet. But I'm wondering how overprotective I would be as the father of a trick-or-treater.
Yeah, we've never actually received an apple or anything that's unwrapped, but I have read somewhere, I can't remember where, that all of that stuff is hype, that there's never been a recorded incident of a child being poisoned on Halloween, that it is all...
Wow, that's hard to believe.
Probably,
you're telling me that's...
By the old white man cabal.
That sounds like an old white man cabal.
Control parents.
I mean, yeah, we certainly appreciate the old white man cabal's grant for funding this countdown that that we've been embarking on. But that does sound eerily like something that they would do, And I think they're behind the whole refrigerator scare of the 1980s as well. Getting trapped in a fridge.
Absolutely.
I could totally see it. So, do you ever have like? Has anyone ever given like pennies or dimes? lame stuff like that.
No, but yeah, I remember as a kid hating that kind of thing.
Yeah,
or awful. Receiving pennies, maybe even nickels. not a wooden one though, and hating that kind of thing.
I mean, that is like the
receiving an apple too in the 70s.
That is the epitome of laziness. If you're a giver of treats, right. I mean that just means that you just forgot it was Halloween. Didn't have time to run to Costco to pick up the fun-size bag of M&Ms, just started rifling through the couch cushions, I guess.
Exactly. Giving away your old fruit.
Oh, baking soda, trick-or-treat. Well, obviously, we got Halloween on the brain, and that means we need to do a very special edition of Objection. This is our little post-Halloween special, and as you know, we are in the guts of our countdown of the top 20 action films loathed by your Prius enthusiast. But we are taking a small digression from that, which is actually a large digression from the usual. I mean, this is like Inception,
There are many layers inside Objection.
That's right. We're about two realities removed. So this is like the Objection Inception special. But so we decided.
That's why these shows are like a half an hour long, because when you go to the other layer, they're an hour long.
That's right.
And 2 hours.
Well, at least they feel like that. I think they're really half hour long, but they feel like they're 3 hours long to the listener. But we've decided to do a little mini countdown. So we're going to stay within the feel and the framework of our movies loathed by the Prius enthusiasts, and just look at top five, so a little mini countdown, top five Halloween films as loathed by the Prius enthusiasts. Perhaps the orange and green colored Prius, we'll give it the Halloween theme. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do they have Halloween themed Priuses? Probably not, right?
Yeah, that's
that, maybe. That endorses candy, and that leads to childhood obesity, right? So
it would appeal to Wiccans, though. So
that's
they
true.
Might.
That's a good point. So yeah, I could see how that fits with the coexist bumper sticker, right? So yeah, okay. Well, I feel like our a-hole meter is really, really top of the line, so
yeah, it's charged up and
charged
ready to go.
the PK a-hole meter is really rocking. So please bear with us if we totally offend you. It's because we're just getting ready. We're keeping our blood sugar a little low because we're getting ready for the candy influx.
Right.
Eating all the leftover candy because someone's got to do that. So, but anyway, so here there are five Halloween-themed movies. And they can, it's pretty broad, but like scary movies or ghost-themed movies, supernatural movies perhaps, endorsed by the old white man cabal, of course, because they are underwriting this whole expedition. And I guess we'll just kick it off. So, Movie number five, as despised by the Halloween-themed Prius enthusiast, Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead, a movie that I like a great deal, actually, even though I know it's a remake of, a holy installment in American film canon.
Yes, a much beloved film. But yeah, it's a good action horror movie.
It is. That's what it is. It is an action horror movie. It really doesn't dwell much at all on kind of the biting capitalist, subversive commentary, right? I mean, this is like the mall is essentially not. It's not a metaphor. It's pretty much like a hold up, and for our heroes as they put spikes and sheet metal on a van and drive over zombies.
Yeah, the mall is text. It's not really subtext
right in
that movie, which is good because much as I love the original Dawn of the Dead, it's probably the last really great Romero movie. Well, I won't say that because I really love Creepshow. I don't know if that's a great movie, but I love it. But in terms of the dead movies, I can deal with Day of the Dead. It's all right. But Dawn of the Dead is sort of his last political commentary that's not
overt and annoying.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't want to make you tear your own eyes out.
Yeah.
And even then, it's pushing it because the whole mall thing is like, it's funny for a few minutes, and then 2 hours later, it's like, okay, I think the original Dawn of the Dead works best when it's just in horror action mode too. Mm-hmm. And I think Snyder was pretty smart to realize that and just say, you know what, I don't need to deal with the political elements because that's been done. I'm just going to make a kick-ass zombie movie with some good horror elements, some great action. I do think it leans more towards the action.
I've always thought that as well. I thought it's, you can get away with even classifying it as an action film more than in horror. There's a few jump scares here and there, and there's gore, of course, but it's... I mean, you could probably swap in some neo-Nazis, right? As the Prius enthusiasts would love to see thrown in there. But they're zombies, and obviously zombies are pretty omnipresent. But a lot of little twists to this. They're not the shuffling along, kind of meandering types of enemies. These are like Usain Bolts running around,
Yeah.
So they're aggressive and they're fast moving and. Our heroes are just kind of forced to become individual Rambos, I guess,
Yeah, that's a really good, one of the things that Snyder did really well, I thought, too, was the supporting cast is really great. The lead cast is pretty good. But, man, what's his name, the dude who played Max Headroom?
Oh, right. I know. Yeah, we all know who you're talking about. Yeah,
his name is escaping me. But Matt Frewer. He has a pretty small role, but it's a really good one.
That's right. And
there's a good payoff. There's, some good emotional content to it. Really good stuff. And that guy who plays the villain, too. I'm trying to think of what he was from.
Yeah.
He was just a total D-bag throughout the entire movie.
You're not talking about the dad from Modern Family, are you?
Yeah,
the dad from Modern
Family. Yeah.
Which this really points to our show prep, but yeah, that's we're about pretty much the guy from this, the guy from that. So and Bing Rames, who kind of who's overused, he kind of plays the same sort of role, but he fits this one. He's kind of the burly security guard who actually has even he has this nice little plot arc, this friendship he has with the other guy trapped on the roof. These little stories pay off nicely, which I think caught a lot of people off guard because my sense when it was announced it was coming out, people were just kind of poised to, take a dump all over it, because they're remake this.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
But I think you're right. I think Snyder and his cohorts were smart in shying away from political commentary, which shockingly enough, not all action/zombie movies have to be. Ensconced in political commentary.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it was good. I mean, that was my first encounter with Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was his first feature. I think it might've been,
at least the big one, I think. I mean, I don't know if he's done smaller stuff prior to that, but that was his debut, I think, as far as a legit box office feature film.
Yeah, and I definitely came away impressed. I mean, yeah. I would have to go back and watch them back to back because it's been a while since I've seen 28 Days Later. But
oh yeah, yep.
my recollection is that I like Dawn of the Dead as much.
Well, to me, 28 Days Later, and this kind of fits into it. I mean, 28 Days Later to me really went off the rails when they got into the military comp, you know, the whole military thing. You know,
right?
Of course, the military are bloodthirsty homicidal maniacs. Of course, they are. You know, why wouldn't they be? And they weren't even zombified, right?
Right.
So that's a nice little contrast we can do. So, all right. Well, let's why don't you take number four, Evil Dead 2?
Yes, Evil Dead 2 makes the list in part because it has the, I don't know if I would call the hero a competent male hero, right. Maybe, but well, he certainly has the guts to cut his own hand off. That's
right.
Something.
Oh yeah. That's somewhere.
But it does have the audacity to, as with its predecessor, to end with a dude surviving instead of the lone girl.
Which is like, yeah, which is a formula that seems to be replicated all the time in horror movies, you know?
Yeah.
I've always wondered, why do you think that is? Is it because, I mean, you know, why would that be? Is it like a reverse chauvinism going on, thinking that, oh, the female has survived, so we're being subversive because people consider, you know, the males the stronger, you know, species? Or I've never figured that out, because they play by that game plan nearly every time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the easy answer is that the kind of university answer is that it's because the movies are made by men and they're misogynists. But I think actually it has something to do with the fact that both men and women, I suspect, are more kind of emotionally affected by seeing a woman in peril than a man.
You know, that's true.
I think women identify obviously with that more.
Yeah,
and men, it also sort of creates an emotional reaction in men to see a woman, and you know.
But how does that explain Corey Feldman in Friday the 13th?
There is no explanation.
There's none at all.
Anything.
That's a good point. So what about like the how about the plot of Evil Dead 2? I mean, pretty straightforward good versus evil type of romp, right?
Yeah, you know, demons. I guess it fails the comparative religion.
That's right.
Test. because they're obviously dealing with some, I can't remember whether it was, you know, Mesopotamian or whatever it was that, you know, but some sort of religion that results in the releasing of demons in possession of human beings. So that's
right.
Not a good thing.
Nope.
I guess, you know, some religions, human flesh covered book is not, you know, not as good a force in the world as, you know, whatever, the Bible or the Quran or, you know, I think they're making a judgment about the Necronomicon. That perhaps.
Now, what happened if you burned the Necronomicon? What would happen to you? You know, would you get out? Would the ACLU come to your defense, do you think, or not? Or would they be besieged by demonic hordes?
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, it would be terrifying. The political protest would be horrible.
That would be horrible. Okay, nice. We're making excellent time. So number three, and this is a movie that I was just telling you before we recorded that I hadn't seen until like 3 years ago, which is something I'll have to live with, unfortunately, a blight on my record. And we're entering the John Carpenter stretch of our mini countdown.
Yes.
So this is the epic, and I mean, if you asked me to come up with a more effective horror movie than this, I'm not sure if I could.
That is,
of course, The Thing, just the classic Kurt Russell movie that just threw a little bit, I mean, a total bomb at the box office, apparently, mm-hmm. You know, which is just really sad. But like I said,
came out like a week after E.T.
Yeah, that's right. It was E.T. It was talk about two extraterrestrials. You know, there's another contrast, extraterrestrials. In E.T. and The Thing. And, of course, E.T., we know that the bad guys are, of course, NASA.
The government, yeah.
Yes. So, whereas The Thing is just this unstoppable alien force. And And it was great. I mean, I knew a little bit about it, but you know, I got an HD DVD. That's how far back, you know how far back it was when I watched it. And I just was blown away. I mean, by everything, even though it's over 20, nearly 30 years old, you know, it was still just this kind of just tour de force of paranoia and special effects that still F me up a little bit when I think about them.
Yeah, they hold up well.
They hold up
for the most
very
part.
Well. Yeah, I mean, just disgusting and shocking, and but even thematically, it's pretty deep for your kind of shock piece.
Yeah. I mean, if you drive a Prius, there's so many reasons to hate this.
So many to hate, yes.
Because there's no government conspiracy. There is not a woman in the movie.
That's right. All men.
All men. They're all pretty competent, really. There's not anybody who's like the dope or, you know, even, you know, they all sort of know what they're doing.
Right.
And, you know, it's just about dudes getting badass on this alien and, you know, doing what they have to do to save civilization.
That's true. I mean, the ending obviously points to that kind of sacrifice. And, you know, the other interesting thing is obviously, you know, paranoia plays a big role in this film. And I always find movies showing how the human species is fallible, not necessarily malevolent, perhaps, you know,
right.
You know, not like mustache twirling villainous cutouts, you know, like your random CIA operative who's gone rogue and is evil in the latest, you know, PG-13 uh-huh. action movie we have to deal with.
Uh-huh. But and that, is forcing some Latin American
yeah, to do his dirty work.
Communist dictator to treat his people poorly.
That's right. Because they need...
Communist dictators are miserable because they're a CIA agent forcing their dictator to treat them badly.
That's right. They need access to a natural gas pipeline. And that's why, you know, there's 20% unemployment and the state shuts down TV stations. You know, that's the reason. No, I mean, I just find it more compelling. You're starting with a group of guys who aren't these villains, but, you know, external forces and pressures kind of show cracks and, you know, just kind of cracks in their constitutions. So they're fallible. Again, not malevolent, but not utopian either, you know?
Right.
So I've always found that compelling. To me, that's more compelling than most things. And the thing really illustrates that well. And then you do have some redemptive moments in it as well. You know, you show, like you had said, kind of the joint sacrifice made at the end. Has a redemptive quality, and again, those kind of stories of the human experience. And boy, this sounds a lot deeper than just the top five Halloween movies that Prius enthusiasts hate. But that's why I think this movie is just so unbelievably great.
Oh yeah, I think it's Carpenter's finest hour.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
And the ending is brilliant, and it always baffles me because there is a group of people who absolutely hate that ending.
And really?
I don't see it. I don't get it.
Could it have
ended? I guess it's just too dark or too open ended, or you know, whatever. But I don't understand.
Way, you know? To me, it can't end any other way. And,
right.
I mean, dark. Holy cow! I mean, have these people watched the same movie with the upside down head on the spider legs? You know, walking.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, boy, like it is all the time. As we talk about this, I need to go watch The Thing now. That's what I'm compelled to do. All right. Well, part two of we are at another level of inception here, Dan, because we've got like a little mini countdown within our mini countdown, within our larger. So this is like the number one of our John Carpenter countdown, which exists within our top Halloween countdown, which exists.
So hopefully, all I can say is when we're done with this next movie, which is the mini countdown within the mini countdown within the major countdown, hopefully that our operative who is right now rolling in a van
right. He hits the jump
he's just in the mini countdown, hopefully in rolling in a van, hopefully he's going to kick on that music as soon as we're done.
That's right. Yeah, we need that Hans Zimmer music to kick in right now. All right, so go ahead. This is another Carpenter movie, and actually maybe not his best, but might be one of my favorites. You know, I don't think objectively I can say it's the best of the stuff he's done, but one of my personal favorites. But go ahead.
It is. It, it, I mean, it's fiercely entertaining and has one of the most ridiculous fistfights ever in the history of films.
And maybe more quotable than Caddyshack, even.
And that's saying something.
It is saying something.
It's 1988's They Live.
Yes, They Live.
With Rowdy Roddy Piper.
In his finest role, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe Keith David, the omnipresent Keith David. This might be right up there with him too. So yeah, They Live. Just a great alien yarn.
And why in your opinion, would a Prius hater?
What would a Prius hater hate him? They Live. Well, for one thing, the old white man cabal is not behind this.
No. You know,
they are not behind it. And neither is E.T. So this is yet another alien invasion movie where the aliens aren't lovable and huggable and or misunderstood. You know, these are formaldehyde face, right? Isn't that what Roddy calls them? So these ugly bastards kind of just massing themselves and kind of just control the masses with, you know, subliminal, like, obey, right? You know, kind of.
Right.
Make them all obey. And again, it's not the government. It's this, you know, it's this malicious alien presence. And who has to defeat him? Like, one of the more alpha males ever seen. Like, one of the more alpha-ist males we've ever seen on screen.
Construction worker.
Yes. Wanderer. Not really, you know, mullet wearer extraordinaire, you know. Pairs up with another alpha male. So you have, like, two alpha males here.
Right.
And the love interest turns out to be a dastardly evildoer, you know, which is rare. I mean, it's rare you would see that, you know, the hero and his love interest, you know, they usually make it to the end, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, so much to love about that. His shooting up the bank with a shotgun isn't very politically correct either, I guess, right?
No. Yeah, the movie's problems in the plot are not solved by government bureaucracies.
That's true.
Scientists, or, you know, anything like that. It's all just construction worker wailing around the hide faces.
And you know, I mean, look at the resistance. You know, the government actually tries to dismantle the resistance, which is just a bunch of blue collar folks. You know, who meet together in secret and found a way around this, and they've developed these sunglasses, you know, and they're actually freedom fighting against this overreaching bureaucracy, which is having its strings pulled by formaldehyde faces. So,
right.
And not by the CIA and, you know, Halliburton. So, and of course, it has got some of the greatest lines ever. So.
That it does.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap up our little Halloween countdown with the clear-cut favorite, I thought. And this is – we can go very deep with this one. It's a beloved movie by everybody. However, I would think your typical Prius enthusiast may enjoy this movie until we start to really tease out why he or she would not, in fact, enjoy this movie.
Yeah, we're about to ruin some Prius drivers' worlds.
We're about to blow some minds here. And so our number one Halloween-themed movie despised by a Prius enthusiast would be Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Ghostbusters. And Dan, I'll let you kick it off because there's a lot, actually, that we can dissect about this.
There is a lot. Number one, Ghostbusters, at its core, is about the power of entrepreneurship. You know, the Ghostbusters themselves start off as kind of irreverent university eggheads.
Just mailing it in, too. You know,
right.
Mailing it in.
Exactly. But they don't become effective. They don't save the world until they're kicked out of the university and start a business of their own and start catching ghosts for money.
That's right.
That's when they're effective. And they save New York. They save the government. The government proves completely incapable.
The government turns to them.
Problem. Right.
Turns to them. Begging.
Right. The mayor comes, calls the EPA guy dickless.
Yes.
And
I mean, the EPA just takes a beating in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. With the dude from Die Hard.
Yes, who always plays
a douchebag.
Classic line. I mean, it's. You would think that the script, you know, was written by Milton Friedman or something.
Yeah.
Classic line by Ray is, you know, you've never had to work in the private sector. They expect results.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, that's like straight out of Halleck or something. So.
Yeah, I think. William F. Buckley might have taken an uncredited pass at the script.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's possible. Absolutely. I mean, it's shocking to me that the EPA isn't targeted more as a villain in other. I mean, if you want to get into government bureaucracies who have just really screwed people over in over the years, you think you'd probably get with the EPA a little bit, but no one has done as effectively as the Ghostbusters have. I mean, essentially this cluster F of a bureaucracy nearly sinks New York City into the, you know, to the pit of hell.
Through regulation, you know, because they're they don't like the idea of these guys having a nuclear
that's right
reactor in their basement. Imagine that.
You know, there's also some biblical Christianity tossed in there. You know, where Winston asks Ray, you know, hey, there's just the end of days. You know, and you think he quotes some revelation or whatnot, and, you know, Ray doesn't discount that. And then talking about comparative religion, I mean, the Gozer worshippers don't come out looking great, do they?
No. No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah, I mean, the biblical stuff is used so effectively that I bet if you polled the American populace, a sizable number of them would actually believe that the phrase cats and dogs living together is from the Bible.
That's right. not to mention that it's just hugely entertaining and you know, very funny and pretty scary for a PG movie, by the way. You know, the whole library scene, that's pretty scary stuff.
The library scene is great. Yeah,
I mean, this is before kind of the Ghostbusters cartoons softened their stance on ghosts. So, you know, Slimer was just kind of a good guy and a friend. Because, you know, the first Ghostbusters, all the ghosts are all douchebags, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Slimer's terrible, yeah.
You just get the sense that he was a horrible human being when he was alive.
That's right.
there's some genuinely scary moments in that movie.
Yeah, you know, that's another one of those movies where you just kind of, if you wander on it across the dial when you're channel surfing, you just feel compelled to watch, you know? And to a lesser extent, even Ghostbusters 2. I think I'm a sucker for Viggo the Carpathian. I've always loved him as a villain, and I'm not sure why. I mean, you know, yeah, I suppose we could, you know, I'm tempted to almost include Ghostbusters 2, but the whole, I don't know, walking the Statue of Liberty through New York City and everybody singing Kumbaya is a little tough to swallow. You know, I think that, you know, that for a non-Prius enthusiast, but still, Viggo the Carpathian is a righteous villain.
He truly is. The other thing about Ghostbusters 2 that I just thought of is there's that scene where this should rile Prius enthusiasts, I think, too, where Bill Murray basically runs down that dude who plays for the symphony.
That's right.
You know, just basically trashes the guy.
And makes him look like an idiot, like a hipster elite. Makes him look like a complete tool.
Right. Emasculates him. You know, basically. Questions his manhood, you know. And then moves on. And he has this very blue-collar sensibility throughout the whole thing.
That's right.
Even though he's a scientist, purportedly. Although one has to wonder if Venkman really does have a PhD.
Well, that's right. He says
what university it possibly.
That's true. Yeah, psychology in Paris. It's got to be DeVry. That's my best guess. You know,
right? Or some place in the Philippines, or you know, something like that. I have trouble believing it. He got a PhD from a accredited, legitimate university.
And actually, another thing I say about Ghostbusters 2 is we learned that even after the Ghostbusters saved the world in the first movie, they got like hit with a bunch of fines. Right? They got the bureaucracy came down on them hard. So again, it's just showing you what a bulging, unwieldy government bureaucracy can do. It can just it can come to you and plead for your free market help, and then take a dump on you when you deliver. You know, so That's
definitely. It kind of highlights this, you know, that back in the day there was a kind of anti-authoritarianism that was as much against the government as against anything else. You know, corporate.
That's true.
Stuff or anything else. You know, now it's sort of like you don't insult the government because they just make life better.
That's right.
You ruin anybody's life. You know, that's the government is the path to utopia.
And even more specific, like even more specific than that, like in these movies that we're talking about, it's like bureaucrats themselves, you know,
right.
Just hacks. You know, like, so what's his face in Ghostbusters is a hack. You know, it's like a symptom of that problem. You know, so they're, you know.
Right, he applies the law with no sense of common sense.
Absolutely, whatsoever. Absolutely. So, that's true.
You know, he doesn't even like bring any experts or anything in. He just brings like a Teamster in and says, "Shut that down."
Right.
He has no idea like what would happen. You know,
that's right.
He doesn't have a scientist or anything there saying, "Well, you know, we can dismantle it, but we have to do it in a careful way." He's just like, "Pull that big lever, turn off the power."
Oh man, excellent. Again, do I want to watch The Thing or Ghostbusters or They Live? This is a tough one. I'm not sure.
It might have to just be a triple feature.
Triple feature night at the Johnson household. So, well, I think that. So, well, we've emerged from our first digression when we finished with They Live, and I think we've just emerged from our second digression. So,
yes.
I think we're riding the kick all the way back up to reality. So, and hopefully you made the trip with us. So thank you for tuning in this episode of Objection. We will resume our regular countdown of action movies, loathed by the Prius enthusiast. And again, if you are a Prius enthusiast and you don't quite fit into our broad generalizations, we apologize. But hey, you know, we're trying to be provocative here, right?
Right. Get a new car.
That's right.
Sakes. Go buy an American Muscle car. Or something.
Yeah, the internet doesn't troll itself, people, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but thank you for tuning into this spooky edition of Country and A-Holery. We appreciate it. We hope you had a great Halloween. We will see you next week. And Dan Mancini, what's left to be said?
Thanks, 10 points easy.
OBJECTION!